Hi, everybody. Welcome. my name's Martin Evans. It's my pleasure and privilege to chair this discussion, debate. I also coordinate the Just Peace campaign for Greenbelt. What we're going to do today is, I'll just give you a quick kind of resume of the process. I'm going to ask the panel to introduce themselves in a second, and then Jane will be the first one to speak. Each of the panelists gets 5 minutes maximum to kind of put their viewpoint in relation to, is it time to boycott Israeli goods, products, services? But within that, I want us to, what do we mean by boycott? Who is it that's doing the boycotting? Those kind of issues we need to, you know, is it all Israeli goods or just some, and so on and so forth? or should we not be doing it? Then after the five-minute introduction, it's your opportunity to ask questions for clarification of each of the individuals here. Then after clarification, we'll have a kind of just a robust discussion. And then I want us to think in about probably an hour's time, what's the implications of what we're saying for Greenbelt, for the Greenbelt campaign? But we won't get onto that until, you know, we've actually explored the issue in some depth. And then if we're down for an hour and a half, that's a long time. If we finish before that, that's fine. So panel, welcome. Thank you very much for a very good panel indeed. Can you just, each of you, just say in a couple of sentences who you are?
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Jane Clements, and I'm the director of the Forum for Discussion of Israel and Palestine, FODIP, which is an interfaith organisation aimed at helping Jews, Christians and Muslims to talk together and find ways of talking together about this difficult subject.
Okay, thank you, Jane. Welcome.
I'm Nigel Vandell. I'm not entirely sure who I am anymore. I once worked for a little development agency called Christian Aid as part of their Middle East work for the last 10 years. Currently, I'm just a green belter with an interest in the region.
Thank you, Nigel. Welcome.
Hello. Can you hear me? Yes, my name's Abe Haim. I'm the chair of Architects and Planners for Justice in Palestine, which is a group who are challenging Israeli architects who build the settlements and the occupation. And I also am one of the dissenting Jews in this country who are working in concert with dissenting Israelis who also are very keen on taking strong action against what is happening in Israel and Palestine.
Thank you, Abe. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Steve Huxby. I'm a policy advisor with the Methodist Church. I focus on international affairs. I work within a team that works with Methodist Church, the Baptist Union of Great Britain, and the United Reformed Church in parliamentary engagement and in development of policy across a wide range of social justice issues. But today I'm speaking just on behalf of the Methodist Church.
Welcome, Steve.
My name is Jonathan Kuteb. I'm an attorney, human rights activist. I'm the chairman of Holy Land Trust, a Christian organization in Bethlehem. I'm also associated with the nonviolence movement, Nonviolence International, and with the Bethlehem Bible College.
Great. Thank you, Jonathan. Welcome. Welcome, all of you. Okay, is it the right time? Is it the time to boycott Israeli products? 5 minutes from each of the panelists, starting with Jane.
Well, first of all, I was very disconcerted, not just to find that I'm in a panel of this illustriousness, but also that everybody else seems to have notes, and I know what a good speaker Nigel is. Well, yes, but you are notes on the whole issue. but anyway, I want to just introduce the topic mainly and perhaps flag up a few questions. And can I begin by saying that I'm speaking very much in a personal capacity. Usually in my work, I'm facilitating discussions with people. I very rarely get to give my own opinion. So please don't take it that this is part and parcel of everything that I'm involved with. This is very much my own personal take on this. And it seems to me that there are three main reasons why we engage in boycotts. And the first one is because we want to live an ethical, religious, ethical Christian life. We want to have values. We want to make sure that all the resources that we have are committed to ways that we're very happy with. We don't want to be supporting governments or regimes in any way that we have problems with. So for our own sort of ethical desires, we want to be clear when we're buying things and when we're not buying things. A second reason for boycotting various goods and services is that people who are being oppressed by that government or regime actually feel they get a sense that there's some sort of moral support out there, that even though they're suffering, and they're suffering doubly through boycotts quite often, that's a price they're willing to pay because they know that people are caring and because people are going to be engaged in the struggle with them. The third reason, and this for me is the crunch issue that makes me ask questions, is we want to actually affect change. And the issue is, of course, does the boycott affect change? Is it likely to change the regime? So, obviously, all boycotts in different political situations, and many of us remember the years when we avoided anything that was South African. We know that each situation is different, although there are certain elements that keep coming up time and time again. But I look to and ask myself the question, what effect does a boycott of goods and services have on the Israeli government and on the possibilities of actually affecting change within the region? Now, of course, the problem is that the discourse of the Israeli government and the leading establishments in Israel is, well, they all hate us, the world hates us, maybe we don't care. That's what we expect. We expect people to ignore us, to mistreat us, to gang up against us. And therefore, what worries me is that these sorts of things that we can sometimes do reinforces that. It doesn't make people think, ah, well, maybe there's an issue here, maybe we ought to think twice about this. It actually reinforces the view that they stand alone and they have to defend themselves and rely on themselves and nobody else is going to care about them and so on and so forth. I mean, it's the old Woody Allen thing, just because we're paranoid doesn't mean to say they're not out to get us. And this is something that we really, really have to think about. And the other issue involved with this, how am I doing? The other issue involved in this is when we boycott services, when we boycott Israeli services, when we have academic boycotts, when we stop inviting Israeli speakers, what does that do to the whole possibility of dialogue, of cooperation, of working together? One of the things that really influenced me was some years ago at Greenbelt, listening to Jeff Halper from the Israeli Committee Against House Demolitions. He's an Israeli. What would happen if we had fewer Israeli speakers coming? And is it okay just to have Israeli citizens who are Palestinians? Or is it just Israeli Jews that we are going to stop coming? And what is that saying? Is that not saying something we really don't want to be saying? So these are the questions that I ask myself. And I think it is possible to look at the situation and look at it in more creative ways and think about, well, how can we actually reinforce and help those links that need to be strengthened with the Israeli left? And the Israeli left does still exist. People think it doesn't still exist, but it does still exist. And how do we keep them going and how do we support them?
Thank you, Jane. I think you're saying that you don't support boycott.
If I can clarify that, I would certainly support a boycott of settlement goods. But I would look twice at supporting boycotts, academic boycotts and service boycotts.
Okay, so lots of things to talk about there. Nigel, please.
I think I might be repeating some of this, but putting perhaps a slightly different spin on it. Like Jane, I think there are kind of two questions you need to ask at the start of this about boycotts. The first question, is it morally justifiable? And the second question, is it pragmatically effective? I think Jane said it was morally justifiable. but I might just question that a little bit. And the second question, is it pragmatically effective? I'm going to say no, and therefore a blanket boycott is wrong. And then I'm going to tell you what boycotts I will endorse. So why is it morally unjustifiable? I think the problem is, or the problem of the occupation is really a problem of the Israeli government. And my question is, do we have a right to punish the majority of Israelis for the actions of their government? And it's a tricky question. In what sense is the government democratically accountable to its citizens, and at what level are the citizens accountable for the actions of the government they elected? But I worry that if we begin to target Israel with a blanket boycott, what we're doing is we're shifting the blame from the government to the citizens. And opinion polls tell us that most of the citizens would actually support a two-state solution, roughly around the Clinton parameters. So we're punishing people who are basically on our side when we should be targeting the government. So the question is that a good thing to do? Is that morally acceptable? Or are we, in fact, arguing for a kind of system of collective punishment that, were it done to Palestinians, we would object to on the basis of international law? Can we keep the same moral argument across that? Secondly, will it work? Again, what I think we're trying to do is change the opinions of the Israeli government here. Now, how do we do that? Do we do it by targeting the entire Israeli public? I don't know if you've been looking at the news today. Some of you may have done. In the news today, Ovadia Yosef, who is the ex-chief rabbi of Israel and the spiritual leader of Shas, which is the ultra-Orthodox party in the government, so a member of the ruling coalition, said in his Sabbath sermon that what he really wants is Abu Mazen, Mahmoud Abbas, to vanish and a plague to come down upon all of the Palestinians who persecute Israel. Now, I'm not sure what kind of coherent dialogue you're going to have with a government that adopts those kinds of views. So I wonder whether the target of our collective action at this current time might not be the government, but the Israeli public. If that Israeli public are already kind of interested in these issues, maybe for now we don't kind of hammer the entire Israeli public with boycotts, but we try and get them on side because we need their help in ousting a government that doesn't seem to want peace just at the moment. So if boycotts are problematic, if blanket boycotts are problematic, what should we be doing? Well, here I think I agree with Jane. If the single biggest impediment to peace is the settlements, how do we go after the settlements? Can we boycott settlement produce that comes out of them? Can we boycott companies that invest in them? Can we go after shareholders of companies that have plants in them? If these settlements are illegal under international law, and they are, if they're an impediment to peace, how can we make them economically unviable? Because if we can do that, and if we can get them out, then I think you have a target that the Israeli public, or at least its left and its peace supporting Israeli public, will go for. It will be less divisive, it will bring people together, and it will contribute to something quite positive.
Thanks very much, Nigel. That's very clearly articulated. Abe.
Oh, hello. Well, I'm afraid I'm going to take a completely different view to this. We have in the past 3 days have heard enough by extremely prestigious and knowledgeable speakers about the situation in Palestine and what Israel is actually doing to the Palestinians. Boycotts mean the opprobrium, rejection, and disapproval for unacceptable and inhumane behavior. This highlights to all the oppressor, the oppressed, and to the government's concern that civil society will not remain silent. Boycotts are imposed as the only legal, nonviolent method to achieve peace and justice when all avenues, including dialogue, have failed. Now, Israel, as you know, since its inception in 1948, with the ethnic cleansing of the Palestinians and its occupation of the West Bank and Gaza, has not been stopped by its Western partners, particularly the US and the UK, in its agenda of taking over the whole of Palestine and its intended transfer of the Palestinian population. It is a rogue state that is out of control and, in fact, is supported by the majority of the Israeli population. So contrary to what the previous speaker has said, the boycott is directed mainly at the government, but also at the society that actually supports them entirely. And they have voted in the most extreme, almost neo-fascist government that Israel has ever had. Now, despite its well-documented breach of over 65 UN resolutions, the Fourth Geneva Convention on the Human Rights of the Indigenous Palestinians, and all the peace agreements from Madrid to Oslo until the present day, Israel has proceeded to illegally populate most of the West Bank. It has actually taken over the whole of Palestine with the intention of transferring out the whole of the Palestinian population. Now, we have got to see what Israel is actually made of, and also the West Bank. The people of Palestine have actually asked. They're the ones that may suffer with the boycott, but they have asked the world internationally to please help us to boycott Israel, so to get the message across that enough is enough. Since even the mighty USA, seeing Israel as its ally, is unwilling to bring Israel to negotiate a just peace, and since Israel acts with total impunity, its government verging towards extreme neo-fascism, it beholds civil society around the world. We're the ones that can say to the Palestinians, we know what is going on, and we will try and bring Israel to its senses. And don't forget that Israel's actions endanger the whole of the Middle East with its possession of nuclear weapons and the whole world. Now, I belong to Architects and Planners for Justice in Palestine, and we are trying to get across to the Israeli architects and planners who are building the occupation and building the settlements that it's an unethical stance, it's against all professional ideals, and it is creating, it's stealing Palestinian land. The extreme of the crimes, the extension of the criminal activity is very similar and beyond apartheid. Even Desmond Tutu, and prominent figures of the Anti-Apartheid Association have said that what is happening in apartheid in Israel is worse than apartheid. And we know that, in fact, the boycott in South Africa did work. It may not have its immediate results, but it did, in the end, help to bring down apartheid. And the people there who are asking for the boycott are willing to suffer for that. Now, you all may know about the Kairos document, and if you don't know about it, I beg you to find out. It's in the, you can get a hold of it in the bookstall. Is all the Christian leaders have actually asked the world, the international world, as almost a theological, they produced a theological argument to say that we need your support. We, the Christian groups and all religions, it's very critical that Israel is banning people from attending and access to the religious holy places. And they've asked the world to join them in helping to overthrow this terrible, to change the situation so that there is an equal society that really relates to peace and justice. And boycotts don't mean sort of completely blanket things. We're not saying boycott individual Israelis who actually are in favor of it. The Israelis and Palestinians who are being invited here are not included in the boycott. It's boycotting institutions. Each and every one of you can work out in your own individual way to what extent you want to boycott. But the major ones are, the major general approach is boycotts, divestments, and sanctions. Getting governments, pressuring governments to stop arming Israel, to stop the close military ties that they have with Israel. It's completely, Israel is one of the strongest military powers in the world, developing very, very sophisticated weaponry that is actually used by the West. So it's civil society that has to bring the message both to our governments and to the Israeli governments that enough is enough. We need, and time is of the essence. If you wait another year to take a decision, the whole occupation will be wrapped up and there'll be nothing left. So it's very, very urgent that we really institute a boycott across all the various fields as much as we can possibly do.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Abe. One of the concerns we had... One of the concerns we had when setting up the panel is that everybody would have the same point of view. Okay. Steve, your turn.
Hi, thanks. Abe is able to talk very well about the situation from a first-hand point of view. I'm therefore going to focus more from the point of view of the Methodist Church and the resolution that was passed recently in the end of June. The Methodist Church has supported a boycott of goods from Israeli settlements and has urged Methodist people to join that boycott. This was not a spur-of-the-moment resolution at Methodist Conference. This followed a process by which a working group was set up in 2009, reported to conference in 2010. A number of resolutions were presented to conference, and there was a debate, and that debate resulted in this boycott resolution. This has brought the Methodist Church in for criticism. How can a church, a major UK denomination, pass a resolution that could jeopardise Christian-Jewish relations in our country so significantly? At the same time, the report and conferences recognised that many Methodists would have liked the Methodist Church to go further, not to limit the boycott to a boycott of settlement goods, but to implement a boycott of all goods from Israel. Now, the Methodist Church and conference hasn't been explicit as to why it hasn't gone further. Therefore, I can only offer you my own views on that. And like Nigel, I'll endorse, I think, your suggestion of two criteria that any boycott needs to fulfill, but I'd like to add a third. So you suggested that a boycott needs to have a clear intention. Secondly, you suggested that it needs to be morally justifiable. I'll throw into the pot also. I believe the boycott, to be effective, also needs to respond to a demand from people in the situation for support and for that type of action. I'm going to concentrate here, I think, on the third, on the principled. And here maybe I might... you'd be happy to hear us just part very slightly from Nigel in order to be able to create a little bit of debate. The principles behind these two forms of boycott, then, a boycott on the first hand of settlement goods, secondly, a wider boycott of all things Israeli. For me, the intention of a boycott of settlement goods is to highlight the impact of the occupation on Palestinians. It also highlights the fact that the occupation of the West Bank is illegal under international law. This is not a new position for the Methodist Church. This is a position that the Methodist Church has taken for some years. It's only this year that the Methodist Church has chosen to back and support that position with a boycott action. Alternatively, the intention of the principle behind a wider boycott of Israel may be to highlight the fact that Israeli government policy has for many years supported an occupation, and that occupation has become more intense in recent years, created far more problems for Palestinians in the West Bank, to the extent now that you can even question whether a two-state solution is still possible, the way in which the West Bank has now been divided up. And this is where I'm going to part from Nigel just a little bit. I'm going to suggest that that is a valid principle. My difficulty, though, with the wider boycott is not the principle, but what the boycott communicates. And I think my concern is that the boycott might communicate a different message to people, that it might communicate that we are opposed to the views of the Israeli people. A boycott against all goods from Israel is going to impact, if it were to broaden and take effect, is going to impact Israeli companies, it's going to impact the people working within those companies. There is not, as we know, an Israeli view of the occupation. there are many different views in Israel, and there are many Israelis who are opposed to their own government's policy on occupation. The opinion polls will tell you that there's a majority of Israelis who would wish to see compromises of land for peace. So I think it would be unfortunate if we were at this stage to send a message that was to deny, that was contrary to the to send the wrong message about the Israelis and their views. In addition, there are many in the Israeli public, both in Israel at the moment and also in the UK, who might support a boycott of settlement goods. They would have more difficulties with a boycott of all goods for Israel. I think at this stage, I would like to them offer them that support with a boycott of settlement goods. Maybe at some stage I could be persuaded on a boycott of all goods for Israel, but that stage is not now. Just to say one last thing, in terms of responding to a call from the people in the situation, if I can back up Abe's insistence that we hear the Kairos call. The Kairos call is a call from Christians in Palestine asking their Christian brothers and sisters in other lands to support them in their situation. We need to hear this call. We need to find out more about the situation, and I think I would suggest we each need to individually to make a response.
Okay, thanks very much, Steve. Jonathan is going to be the last one to give his view, but if you can kind of be getting your questions ready, the next stage I want to be very much getting clearer perhaps what people are saying, and then we'll have some opinions after that. So, Jonathan.
This is very interesting. I've been told that this type of debate took place in South Africa during apartheid. And among liberal white South Africans who were totally opposed to apartheid, the views were pretty much split 50-50, whether there should be a blanket apartheid of South Africa, including sports, music, etc., including those companies that, in fact, were opposed to apartheid, and between those who said, no, we have to be careful, we have to be selective, this hurts the blacks more than the whites. Among black South Africans, however, opinion was totally united. Please do the boycott. That's the only thing that is going to really be felt and will really send the message that you will boycott South Africa until it ends apartheid, which it eventually did. And today there is no boycott of any sort. To the contrary, South Africans, white and black, are welcome everywhere. I would suggest to you that there are three reasons, even more so than South Africa, why a boycott in this situation is definitely needed. The first is that, unlike South Africa, the State of Israel was created, sustained, and empowered largely by the rest of the world, particularly the Western world. It continues to enjoy very high standards of living, tremendous military and political advantage, economic power, and also immunity from international law, precisely because of the support it gets from the outside world. That means that, unlike South Africa, the Western world particularly, and Christians also, are implicated in what Israel does in a major way. Therefore, they must think very hard, how are we going to bring an end to this injustice? A second reason, closely related to the first, is that Israel has been brilliant in developing immunity against international law. Unlike other countries and regimes that violate human rights, that torture people, that are undemocratic, that are racist and discriminatory, Israel continues to enjoy doing all these things while having a wonderful press, a wonderful PR, a wonderful image. In fact, it enjoys special relations with the European community, trade, cultural, everything else, but it is exempted from the human rights provisions of the EU trade agreements. The EU enters into agreements with different countries, and they always insist that these countries respect human rights, but Israel is somehow exempted. Israel has managed to live with a situation in which others can criticize us as long as they keep the support coming. The International Court of Justice, wonderful. They can rule what they want. It's irrelevant. We are special. We are unique. We are entitled to special consideration. For that reason, if nothing else, I think that civil society and Christians in particular must consider seriously what to do. Because Israel is now in a situation where it can live with losing public opinion as long as the governments, the leaders, those who count, continue to support it. And Europe is a perfect example. I think Israel has lost the battle for public opinion in Europe, but continues to enjoy total, complete, unqualified support from the governments. Israel can live with any amount of church resolutions as long as they are not effective. Third reason, and with this I will stop. I'm a pacifist. I believe that violence is not the way of Christ. I also believe that Palestinians need to use nonviolence because it's far more effective than resort to the gun or the bomb. This is the message that I give to my fellow Palestinians, both Christians and Muslims, very forcefully. And they tell me it doesn't work. And I tell them, yes, it does work. And they tell me it's ineffective. I tell them, yes, it is effective. It's far more effective than violence. Once you realize that we are living in a situation where the injustice cries out, and people are willing to pick up the gun, I tell them, don't. Nonviolence is the way. And for that, I need to say, look at what nonviolence is achieving. The flotilla of ships that came to break the siege of Gaza, even though it ended up with 9 people martyred, has been far more effective than all the Qassam rockets that have been shot. And this message delivered to the Palestinians means a lot to us. To help us be nonviolent and stay nonviolent, you need to show us that you also care. Not just to pass resolutions, not just to make polite statements, but to also be willing to do something effective in nonviolence along the lines of boycotts, divestments, for God's sake, don't make money off of our suffering, and sanctions, which means punishing those who violate human rights. And this is regardless of what the rest of the population is doing. I think it is very essential that we do it. And in Israel, as has been pointed out, the majority do vote for the government, and the government does reflect the views of the Israeli people.
Okay. Thanks very much. Okay. I'd like to give all of you the opportunity to respond to each other in a second. But before that, I'd like to get some questions from the floor. So where's the mic?
Hello.
Where are you?
Right, hello, at the back.
Okay, sorry. Can you go over to the lady in the blue for some?
Oh, certainly.
I'd just like to ask a very simple question. How is it possible to boycott only the goods coming out of settlements? They only have to put Made in Israel on them. How do we tell?
And they do.
Okay, so I mean, that's an important question, isn't it? It's not only the telling, but actually what is the distinction between settlement and all Israeli goods? Do you want to pick that first, Nigel?
Yeah, it's a very good question, because at the moment it's not clear. At the moment there are loopholes in the labelling laws. The British government issued a non-paper, what's called a non-paper, in 2008, I think, about labelling of goods. And this was kind of a marker. It was seen as a political shot across the bows that the British government were getting serious about settlements, saying that the British public needed to have that kind of information in order to make informed decision. And DEFRA indeed are coming up with labelling guidelines in order to make sure that companies label these things. At the moment, if you go into Tesco and Sainsbury's and whatever, all of the herbs are labelled produce of West Bank, and it doesn't say where they're from. And quite often Israeli companies mislabel stuff, or they mix labels. So they get some stuff out of settlements, mix it with goods made in Israel proper, and relabel it as produce of Israel. Though interestingly enough, if you talk to the supermarkets, they can often trace exactly where stuff has come from. So there's all sorts of loopholes and evasions going on, and one of the political campaigns we need to be involved in is really strict labelling laws about goods coming out. At the moment, because if you're labelled from Israel and you benefit from the EU Association Agreement, you get cheap deals, you get less tariffs coming in with Israeli goods. A lot of Israeli companies do this in order to get the tax benefits. But in fact, the Revenue and Customs have been going after companies on this issue about avoidance of paying tax by giving the wrong origins, labels of origin. And at the moment, I think they're after companies for about, I mean, it's not a vast amount of money, about £500,000 worth of unpaid tax revenue by Israeli companies that are kind of falsifying where those goods are. So okay. It is something we can do about.
Jane?
Yeah, very quickly. I think this is one of the creative ways of looking at things that I was talking about earlier. PR works, and PR is one thing that really does work. And Jonathan highlighting the recent flotilla, it was the PR that did that. Boycotts can be very negative. Once you're boycotting it, it fades out of the public consciousness. But to keep on at the government about we want to know where these goods are coming from, and we have a particular view about this, I think is a really important way forward.
Okay, Steve then, Abe. Steve first, yeah.
Yeah, if you do come across products in your supermarket labelled West Bank and there's no other distinction, you need to write to the supermarket on that now, because DEFRA in December of last year issued new labelling advice, which advises that supermarkets must distinguish whether the product has come from Israeli settlement areas or from Palestinian areas. We've now written to 9 supermarket chains to find out how they're following up this DEFRA advice. We're getting some very good responses from some less good responses from others, and we'll make those responses public when we've checked them back with the supermarket. But DEFRA have issued this new guidance because they recognise that there is consumer interest in knowing whether products have come from Israeli settlement areas or from Palestinian areas. So do write to the supermarkets, do write to DEFRA.
Talked about clear labelling, but I'm still not clear about why settlement, and so Abe and then Jonathan.
Yeah, part of the problem, other than outright deception, is that Israel has annexed large areas of the West Bank, including Jerusalem, East Jerusalem, and they have the Atarot industrial zone in Jerusalem, which Israel itself considers part of Israel. And Israel talks about the West Bank and Jerusalem as if they were two separate areas. And very often they will tell you, this is West Bank. This is Israel, not West Bank. And they're talking about East Jerusalem. There is no method in Israel to distinguish clearly, and certainly no interest in distinguishing clearly between those settlements that are in Jerusalem and those settlements are in the West Bank. So you have a very serious problem making that distinction.
Yes, it's like the thing is, all this fluffing around is just very unproductive. You know, why sort of have to write, you know, whether this is the West Bank and this is where the idea that the government has introduced is that it gives consumer choice. So it's still saying that people can buy Israeli goods. Now, who is actually occupying the West Bank. It's Israel. Everything that comes from the settlements originates in Israel. So there's no point in separating the two if you want to be safe. And we know that there's deliberate mislabeling. If you want to be safe, boycott the rest, because it's Israel that is creating the occupation, Israel that is, you know, creating the settlements. And the only way that you can be sure is an outright boycott of all Israeli goods, which will really have the impact.
Okay, I want to take. I know people want to respond to each other, but I'm still wanting. I have two or three more questions from the floor. Gentleman in purple, or whatever that colour is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not a bishop. I'd just like to make that clear. I'm actually a Methodist and want to express my deep disappointment that the Methodist Church did not take the full step of proposing to boycott all Israeli goods.
Do you have a question?
Yeah, I disagree with my colleague Steve. I mean, I was on the anti-apartheid movement executive committee all through the 70s and 80s, and we had exactly the same discussions and exactly the same debates in Methodism and in the other churches. And in the end, we got to the point where it was recognised there was a political grouping in Israel, as there was in South Africa, who are not interested in changing unless they're forced to change. So I'm asking Steve, how long is it going to be before you're persuaded? What else do the Israelis have to do to persuade you that we need to boycott the whole lot?
Okay, we'll hold on for a second, Steve. Just a couple of other questions. Lady in white here with a very snazzy hat on. Yeah, that's you.
Very simply, boycott until when? What would be the defining moment?
Until the occupation ends. Okay. Presumably until the occupation ends.
And Israel follows international law.
One more question. Gentleman with the white beard.
Is there any way of distinctively identifying Palestinian products as opposed to Israeli products?
Okay, we'll do all the three questions then. So, Steve, would you like to respond to your colleague?
Yes.
When is the Methodist Church going to bite the bullet, as it were?
The answer is, it's up to you. The important thing to recognize about this report that's come to conference and to the conference resolution is that conference is a democratic body. And what the Methodist Church has passed this resolution not because church leadership during a coffee break thought that a boycott of Israeli goods might be a good idea, but because many people in the Methodist Church felt that this was a critical issue for the church at a national level to engage with. Let me give you an example. We had someone who was in Palestine for 3 months with the Ecumenical Accompaniment Program. She knew what the Palestinian Christians were asking of her and of other Christians for support. So she came back and initially managed to persuade her local circuit, that is the equivalent of a sort of team ministry, to believe that this was a matter which was relevant to them as a local circuit. And so she was able to persuade them, a group of about 100 people, to take a vote on this and to send a resolution on boycotts to Methodist Conference. That was one of the mechanisms by which Methodist Conference made this decision. So my suggestion, my recommendation on this is that let's all of us look at the equivalent structures that exist within our own churches at local level, at diocesan level, or district level, national level, and let's work out how we can use them.
Okay, you might have time to come back to that later. But This seminar says, is it time? This is
very important, because I think in the very near future, Israel is going to conclude a certain arrangement under which it will perpetuate the occupation forever and call the occupation ended, just like they claim they ended the occupation of Gaza when they made the rearrangement of forces there while continuing to rule the whole area. In fact, they will even call it a Palestinian state, if you will, while keeping the settlements in place and keeping control. So we have to be very careful of what things are being called. We have a situation that needs to end with genuine sovereign independence, and I don't see that anywhere very soon, unless there is real pressure from the outside.
Okay, and the final question about Palestinian goods. How can we distinguish?
Well, I can answer that. Okay. The problem is you cannot export stuff from Palestine under the label of made in Palestine. The Israelis will not allow it. They control all the borders. Right. Barely you can do it made in the West Bank. But a clear statement of Palestinian certificate of origin, the Israelis will not allow it. They are in charge.
Yes, you can actually buy proper, real, authentic Palestinian goods here. There's an organization called Zaytun, and they're actually selling stuff here in Greenbelt. Olive oil, soap products, a lot of things made by olive trees. So there are genuine Palestinian products that you can buy, and you can encourage a supermarket to actually purchase. But don't forget that Israel has done everything to destroy the Palestinian economy. It's wrecked it. It's destroyed agricultural land, olive trees. It makes it very difficult for Palestinians to export their produce. So, there's a very unequal situation here. And you really have got to make your sort of pressure felt.
How do you spell that, the name of the organization?
It's Zaytun, Zeitoun. Is that right?
It's
Arabic. Z-A-Y. Z-A-Y-T-O-U-N. Actually, there were leaflets being handed around.
Okay. A quick comment from Nigel on what's been raised.
I have my Taibeh T-shirt on as well. Taibeh is a Palestinian bee you can get in the West Bank. I don't know if anyone's stocking this yet in the UK, but I'd love to see it in supermarkets because I just so want buying and drinking beer to be a political and religious act.
Okay, I'm gonna let the panel have a respond to each other, but we could take another two or three questions. The lady at the back in the grey. Well, here's some questions now.
I'm Anne Clayton. I'm from Sabeel, UK, so I work with Palestinian Christians. I'd like you on the panel, those of you who are not inclined to support a boycott, and I'm not saying whether I actually support one or not, how do I go back and tell my Palestinian Christian friends, what do I tell them? In your terribly reasoned, wonderful, time without end argument to a people who are desperate, I can't tell you how despairing they are of what we in the West are allowing to happen to them.
Yeah.
How do I tell them? What am I going to tell them?
Got that. Okay, we'll come back in a second. Gentleman at the front here in the kind of blue, 1969, great year. A question, please,
Two questions, actually. Right. Firstly, to Jane and Nigel, do you agree that if a democracy elects a government, the electorate are responsible for its actions and therefore must bear the consequences? Secondly, do you really disagree with a full boycott, or are you just trying to make up the other side of the argument?
Okay, well, I think we're going to stay here for a little while now. So, firstly, I'd like you to respond, Nigel, and then Jane, to what the lady said. The first thing, i.e., when the Palestinian Christians are telling us that they want boycott, and you're fiddling around, how do you respond to that?
I suspect we probably have the same Palestinian Christian friends. I tell them the same way I've just told this audience, actually. I fundamentally, at the moment, believe the most effective thing to do is go after settlement goods. I may be wrong, ultimately, but that's what I believe. There is no doubt we need to do something about this. There is no doubt something needs to happen. I'm doing what I think is best.
What about Jonathan's point about it's impossible to tell?
Impossible to tell, sorry.
The difference between settlement goods and
Well, that's the campaign about labelling as well. Let's just move the labelling debate on a little bit as well, because I think we should be trying to push that further. At the moment, there's a kind of fudged grey area in EU law about whether or not sourcing something from a settlement that is illegal is in itself per se illegal. Yeah. So actually, labelling is a good thing. Let's do that. But has someone got the balls to sue someone
who's sourcing from the goods and try and set a precedent in law so that we can actually outlaw them and make them illegal. That might be an interesting action to do.
I said Jane, and then Abe. Jane.
In answer to your question, you may remember at the beginning, I gave three reasons three questions to address on a boycott. And the second one is the fact that this is what Palestinians are asking for, and our Palestinian friends and our Christian brothers and sisters. But it would be fine to go back and say to them, okay, we're going to boycott. But I would want them, I would expect them to ask, what else, or what then, or what next? And I think this is why I feel that the blanket boycott, I'm worried about it, because we'll then feel that we've done everything. And we haven't done everything. We haven't nearly done everything. We haven't begun to do everything. And okay. So therefore, I think it's almost, that's a second question. How are we really going to affect change and make a difference? And I think PR, I think keeping things in the international media, I think keeping pressure on America, all these things are the really important positive things, and working alongside those Israelis, not all of them, but those Israelis who are also working for the same thing.
Abe.
Hello, yes, there's much more beyond just the boycott. Israel craves respectability. They get furious when it is criticized, and they want to be recognized as part of the democratic world, you know, which in fact it is not. It is not a genuine democracy. With the academic boycott, for instance, we architects and planners actually made a protest when Ariel University, which is in the West Bank, in an international competition for building a solar house, that university was shortlisted for the final competition in Madrid, claiming it was from Israel. Now, we wrote to the Spanish Ministry of Housing and said, Ariel is in illegal occupied territory, and please remove this team, you know, from your shortlist. And in fact, they did. There was a lot of pressure. It built up. And the Israeli foreign ministry were furious. You know, they called the foreign, you know, the Spanish foreign. It created a furore. Now, it's all these areas, the academic boycott, the cultural boycott, getting performers here, pop stars who are now refusing, you know, to go and perform in Israel. They're great fields. You know, and the whole idea is to amplify and extend things like the Swedish multi-lock factory, which was situated in the West Bank, has now moved out of the West Bank, you know, or moved completely out of the country. The Anglican Church, the Synod, voted to disinvest from Caterpillar, you know, which is the company that sells bulldozers, that demolish, you know, the enormous fields. Each person, each community can develop their own thing. And the main thing is to get the facts right, get to all the facts. The Palestinian Solidarity Campaign has detailed leaflets on how to organize a boycott, and each community can do this.
Can you ask that gentleman, can you ask your first question again? And then will you respond to it, please?
I'll try. Yeah. My question
and
was...
And then Jonathan, up there.
In Israel, it wants to be a democracy, and it regards a full boycott, and about whether we have a moral imperative to do that. If a democracy is elected a government, does the electorate therefore not have to bear the brunt of the consequences of the actions of those government?
And you made that distinction between the public and the government.
I mean, in a representational democracy, how much are we to blame for the decisions of the people we vote for, or in fact don't vote for, is an interesting question. And you can kind of do it in sliding extremes, can't you? I mean, am I responsible for decisions, say, made by Claire Short at DFID while I was voting for that political party? Or more interestingly, if I voted for a political party that took us to war in Iraq that may have been illegal, am I in some way to blame, and should I be up in front of a human rights court for illegality? And there's got to be a sliding scale where actually I'm not responsible for those kind of decisions. I shouldn't be in court. So I think there is a distinction between a representational democracy, those elected officials, and the people that elect them. Okay, it's not entirely broken.
Jonathan, you can either respond to that or your earlier point.
I have another point, I may.
Yeah.
I love the fact that we are here in England and not in the United States. In the United States, in this debate, the one central issue that comes up again and again is, what will it do to my relation with my Jewish brother in the United States? The rabbi has talked to my priest and says, if you pass that resolution, I won't talk to you anymore. We will stop the dialogue. I'm glad this hasn't come up now, but it may and will come up. If Greenbelt takes this step, it will face this issue. What does it do to dialogue between Christians and Jews, which we've been working on all this time? And if I may, I want to say something to that. I hope it's not an issue, but I'm sure it is. And the reality is that there are a lot of very good, decent, progressive Jewish people in this country, in the United States and elsewhere, who are excellent on any number of issues, but who will stop short when you're trying to do something effective on the Palestinian issue. They're opposed to settlement, therefore the two-state solution. They really hate human rights violations, but when it comes to actually doing something concrete, not only do they stop short, but they think it's their duty to stop you from doing it. And they'll use their progressive credentials to make that argument. So we must find a way to dialogue that doesn't cripple us or paralyze us. So okay. That we can hear them, yes, but they can also hear us.
We're moving on to another question here, and I want to stay pulled back just for a second. Abe, how do you respond to Nigel's point about the distinction between the Israeli public and the Israeli government? Do you accept that separation?
Well, obviously the Israeli public have voted in the Israeli government, but the point about the public being responsible for war crimes, it's the government. Tony Blair is the one that took us into war, and he is responsible. He and George Bush are responsible for war crimes, not the public. But okay. In terms of what Jonathan said, even the Methodist Church's thing about settlement goods raised the hackles of the chief rabbi who said it's going to harm community relations. Now, that is very obviously what is going to happen. But you must not allow this to actually be used as moral blackmail, because the main point is what is the right and moral thing to do. That is the actual thing. And Stephen said earlier about the Kairos document being addressed only to Christians, it's not. If you read the document, it is addressed to everybody. It addresses the communities, the Muslim, Jewish, and Israeli communities within Palestine and Israel, and to the international community. It addresses everybody. So this is what they're saying. That's the moral and religious, theological, correct things to do.
Going to take two more comments from here, and then we're going to go another question. So Jane, Jane, Stephen, and Nigel, then we'll go out again.
I just want to respond to the point about that Jonathan made about how do you talk to Jewish people and others about this. And this is what FODIP does, my organisation. And if I can just not apologise for injecting a sort of a little bit of sermonising here, but I take my guide from how Jesus spoke to people in the New Testament. He approached every single one as an individual. He didn't have a blanket approach to people. He got to know, he knew each person, and he spoke to each person individually. And that's what we have to do with our Jewish friends and neighbours, to get to know them, for them to understand where we're coming from, to hear where they're coming from. And sometimes there are issues of fear. Maybe they have family in Israel. We need to understand that in order to begin the dialogue with them about giving our point of view too. It's a long job, but it's an individual thing, and it's based on relationships.
What about if you disagree with them though? What about if you understand where they're coming from, but you disagree
with
them fundamentally?
Of course, but you need to earn the right to say what you want to say so that you can hear what they want to say too. Okay.
Steve?
Thank you. So we've been told that this action the Methodist Church has taken will harm relations. If that were the case, I think that we should still consider boycotts. We should still implement boycotts if those are principled. I'd like to be a little bit more positive, because I'd like to say I don't think that will be the case. But certainly our experience to date has been there's been an awful lot more dialogue in many different levels between Methodists and Jewish people, and particularly on this subject, than there has been in the past. So I was talking with someone the other day who was saying that their Methodist church is in a cul-de-sac with a Jewish synagogue. And they have excellent relations between the two and a lot of discussion, but she suspects very little discussion on this topic in the past.
Okay, right. Nigel, then we're going to go back out again.
Just a very quick point, because lots of people say, you know, if you're going to boycott, it's going to cause issues between communities here. To how you spin it, isn't it? I thought it was the occupation that was causing problems between the communities here and not the things we were trying to do to remedy the occupation. Depends where you see that point starting. Yeah, sure.
Okay, thanks, Nigel. The gentleman at the back there with the red, a bit of red there. Before you speak, I've had a very helpful little note here. The Co-op stocks Equal Exchange Palestinian olive oil. So Co-op does that. Right.
I wonder if you could comment on another moral issue, if we could bring in another moral issue, which is that when you buy Israeli goods, those companies pay taxes, which then support the military occupation. So when you buy Israeli goods, you are actually supporting the Israeli military machine, which would be another good reason to boycott all Israeli goods.
Yes, that's a good point. Okay, we'll take a couple more questions. Sorry about making you run around here. Lady at the front. So does anybody want to, respond to that?
Yeah. There are other organisations and cooperatives and so on in Israel as well. For example, there's a women's cooperative in Galilee, which some of us support, which has Christian, Muslim and Jewish women working together. Their money goes back into the Palestinian community in Nazareth.
Okay, please.
Yes, I wondered whether tourism could be discussed as an issue for boycott or non-boycott. Because it hasn't been mentioned yet.
Here.
Anybody? Jonathan, respond
absolutely.
To that. So we've got two questions there. One about supporting the military, and secondly about tourism.
Absolutely. I think tourism is a very, very important issue to address, both for those who want to boycott and those who don't. The problem is the vast majority of tourists come into Israel, stay in Israeli hotels, have Jewish Israeli guides, very, very important, and buses, and hotels, and are warned by these guides not to go into the Arab areas because it's dangerous. And they just come in for 10 minutes to see the Church of Nativity, and then they're whisked back away, and they're prevented, and they're indoctrinated against going to the Palestinian areas. So those of you who want to go and visit the Holy Land, please use Palestinian tour agencies, insist on Palestinian guides, and stay at Palestinian hotels, and you are most welcome.
Okay. Anybody want to pick up on the military thing?
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah, the military is actually entrenched within the whole of Israeli society. The Israeli public, whom Nigel is so concerned about, all go into the army. They all serve in the occupied territories. And, all the academic, the universities, the research is mostly linked to the military and arms, and you know, in Tel Aviv University, for instance, is the actual headquarters of the Israeli army's research facilities. So the military is very, very entrenched, you know, within the whole aspect, even in tourism. And as Jonathan said, you know, use all this within Israel. It's even within Israel, there's something called alternative tours that take you into the occupied territories. In Silwan, you know, which is this what they call the City of David, there's an alternative archaeology organization that actually organizes genuine tourism, you know, to take you to the real to show you what is really happening. And of course, Linda Ramsden, one of the key organizers Exploring Palestine? Experience, okay. Travel tours. So there are many areas, you know, where you can actually use alternatives.
Okay, gentleman in black, and then the gentleman in the yellow after that. And
okay,
then we'll...
thanks. I want to go right back to the beginning. The arguments that were made against the boycott by Jane and Nigel. I mean, I think what you're saying sounds nice and plausible, but I think they're based on a fundamental flaw. And that flaw is the idea that the pressure that we exert internationally is towards Israeli society, and Israeli society is going to pressure their own government to change. That is not going to happen, according to most analyses, including Jeff Halper, who you cited as part of your argument. I mean, he's quite adamant, he's quite clear, that is not how Israeli government policy is going to undergo this huge shift. It's not going to be through working with the Israeli left, which is weak, fragmented, and so on. That's not to say we shouldn't be doing that, but that's not how change is going to occur, and that's what all the analyses are saying. So the argument against the boycott that you're putting forward, and Nigel too, is flawed on that basis, I would suggest. And Jeff Halper supports the boycott absolutely, fully, and unequivocally.
Okay, thanks very much. Gentleman in the yellow, you're doing a sterling job here.
Apologies, I think we're sort of hounding Nigel and Jane here a little bit, but I'm going to continue in that vein a little bit to sort of support what Abe's been saying. I spent a short while in June in both Israel and Palestine, and I'd like to sort of go a bit more abstract and a bit deeper into your discussion of the sort of elements of democracy and can you distinguish between the leaders and the people. But my experience of Israel was I was just amongst the nuts and bolts of a war machine. There was absolutely nothing that I could distinguish whenever in Israel between it being a nation of people and it being a war machine. When you're on the buses are full of guns and soldiers of the young people of Israel. From the schools, which have a brainwashing national curriculum, to the youth movements, which have a militant Zionism instilled in them institutionally, that actually, as a youth movement, drive people to join the military in groups. I've experienced meeting with an Abe, indeed grew up in for a short while, I believe. I'd like to sort of extend Abe's argument to a direct question, Nigel and Jane. Can you distinguish, yes, between a people and its government, but can you distinguish a people of soldiers with a militant government?
Will you go over to the lady in red Jane, please. Thank you. And thanks for doing a sterling job in it.
I'm not really distinguishing personally between the Israeli government and the Israeli people. What concerns me about the boycott issue is that we will put, in a sense, we will think, okay, we've ticked that. We're not buying anything Israeli. It's Israel's a militant society. Israel's an oppressive society. We're just going to have nothing to do with them. Close the door. That's it. And it worries me that is the way that things will happen. And I would like us to be working. Yes, the Israeli left is weak, but it's in some amazing places. And there are some people in the Israeli, in the IDF, who are also left-wing. There are refuseniks. There are people there. It's very difficult for Israeli people to come to terms with what their society is doing. It quite often, especially young people who've been brought up, as you say, in that way. And so I don't want to differentiate, but I don't want the Christian response to be seen as an entirely negative one. I want us to be doing something positive.
Nigel, do you want to add to that?
It's an argument I have with Jeff on an occasional basis over beers. I think actually we've disagreed on that one, Jeff and I, and we've just come to that conclusion. I'm not sure we can do much more than that. Just the issue about the militarisation. It's a tricky one. I guess the question back would be, if we have this society that's almost paranoid about it, and that's why it's militarised, become more militarised. If the international community begins to take punitive sanctions, does that diffuse the paranoia or enhance it and make the situation work? And it's a tricky question, but I think it could go. And actually, while I've got the mic, Co-op do stock the Palestinian olive oil. Interestingly enough, Co-op stock nothing from settlements, as far as I'm aware. So if you shop at the Co-op, good for you.
Co-op. Okay, Jonathan.
I'm really confused by this argument that says that the Israelis are paranoid and we mustn't do anything to make them more paranoid. I recognize they are paranoid. but they're not a weak victim. They are a powerful machine. Yeah. They have the fourth largest army, strongest army in the world. They have an arms industry. And people don't realize how connected they are with the rest of the, particularly the Western world. They consider themselves part of Europe. They want to be part of Europe. So the area of boycotts doesn't end with saying no. It gives you a whole range of activities. When the Philharmonic comes to sing, you picket outside. When they want to join in sports activities, in cultural activities, in academic conferences, in trade shows, there's a whole wide variety. That's the beginning, not the end, of what you can do to pressure them into a more just society. Make them be what they want to be, what they like to think of themselves.
Sorry, could I just comment? We are forgetting that Israeli society also includes the Palestinian Israelis. Yeah. I mean, 20% of the population in Israel is Palestinian. And they are now being targeted. You know, everyone says, oh, Israel is a democratic state. They're bringing in laws to punish and imprison anyone who proposes a boycott. They are the Palestinian a minister of parliament who was on the flotilla, was actually had death threats and has all her privileges taken away in the Israeli parliament. So what we're doing is supporting, you know, quite a large minority within Palestine. And we're not saying dialogue shouldn't continue. Of course, dialogue. You know, we're not saying this isn't the end of dialogue. All the left-wing people who agree with the boycott and ones who are anti-racist, of course, you know, are welcomed here. We're not saying, you know, boycott the whole of the Israeli society.
Quick comment from Steve.
Just a quick issue the Methodist Church has highlighted. The military cooperation, UK military cooperation with Israel. The UK government has taken the position that it doesn't want UK exports to military exports to support the occupation. Right. But there's an elephant in the room here.
Right.
In that every year we import Israeli arms to the UK, and millions of UK pounds are going therefore into the military establishment in Israel, and we effectively have.
Right, we're going to take three more comments now. The lady in red, and then the lady over here has been very patiently waiting for a long time, and then the lady in the kind of green khaki. Three questions or comments, and then I want to do one final thing. We're nearly at the end.
I'd just like to make an observation, and that is that, I mean, the people that are at Greenbelt who are aware of this situation is fantastic. That's a very small percentage of our church community, and that is an even smaller percentage of our country's community. Therefore, if we're fragmented as to what we're going to boycott, surely that's going to make it far more ineffective than if at least we can all get together about what we're going to do. Secondly, I just want to ask, I know that there's a Facebook group, Boycott Against Israeli Goods. Is there anything else online that I can look at?
Actually, your first point, what's your view?
Oh, that we should.
We should, okay. Can you charge over here? Sorry about that. Anybody know of any other Facebook groups? Any other? Anybody? Say it again.
Boycott Israeli goods.
There's the PSC. The PSC has a whole range of information. The Palestine Solidarity Campaign. Just Google that, and you'll get. And of course, in the G tent, they've got all the material, all the information, leaflets telling you exactly what to do. And really, you know, don't leave the festival without grabbing a lot of those information leaflets and join them.
Okay. Yeah, EAPPI.
If there was a boycott, which I hope and pray there will be, and I've been boycotting for the last 20 years, all of Israeli stuff. But what I wanted to know is, perhaps Abe or Jonathan could maybe explain it, would it be illegal to fund Israel, like Europe and USA send them billions every year and funds the army and the wall and the settlements? I mean, if there were, would that be something separate, like complete sanctions? Or, you know, is it just a boycott of goods coming out? I'd like to see the funding stop going in.
Well, I think the history of boycotts is when governments fail to do what everybody knows they should, ordinary people, students, citizens, unions, churches, start to agitate through boycotts, through sanctions, through divestment campaigns, and therefore bring pressure on the governments. The governments are the last to move. They will not move quickly. But if they see that their entire population is moving, then maybe there is hope that they will change as well. But I think the call now is for civil society. The call now is for the church to act. The call now is for people of conscience who care about justice, who care about peace, to take the lead. And it requires some faith, some hope that, you know, that there is God and something will happen.
Before the lady speaks at the front here, Greenbelt, now, Greenbelt, I want to, those who have a view about this, can you come and stand here and we'll just hear your view. Should Greenbelt be, at this time, be supporting boycott?
Boycotts, developments, and sanctions.
Yeah, boycotts, developments, and sanctions.
Divestment and sanctions.
Yeah. What is your view about whether Greenbelt should be shifting its campaign toward that kind of development? If you have a view about that, come stand here while that lady speaks.
Put your hands up. Yeah.
Or put our hands up.
Just the anti-apartheid campaign obviously carried with it a sporting boycott, and sport was a big part of play in South African psyche and society, and possibly a bit different in Israel. But in 2012 Olympics, Israel's going to be there and cast as a respectable country alongside other countries there. And obviously we can go and campaign not against individual sports people, but against Israel being part of these international sporting events and carrying that cloak of respectability when, the, you know, what they're doing is absolute unbelievable.
Thanks.
Would the panel support a sporting boycott?
Yeah. Okay, we're going to...
Of course. It's a very important part of the boycott movement. Don't forget the Israelis are crazy about football and basketball and any of their teams coming here. You know, recently they came to play at the stadium, the Emirates Stadium in Islington. And the funny thing is that they have a deal. Actually, Arsenal has a deal with Israel to promote tourism, which is ridiculous. So all these areas, you know, if you belong to a football club, anything like that, ties like that, you know, must be boycotted and protested against. So certainly, you know, whatever you can do on that basis.
I'm going to ask the whole panel for your final comment in a few minutes. Sorry. Okay, so if you pan the microphone down, so what's your feelings about Greenbelt?
I'd like to see Greenbelt actually stand up and take a stand to support a boycott. Yeah. Carte blanche. Certainly to continue the dialogue, but we've got to get off the fence and actually make a clear statement. We argued and fudged South Africa for years and years and years. Time is running out for Israel. Yeah. We have not got the luxury of waiting any longer.
Okay, move down the line. Thank you very much.
Do Green Belters believe in truth and justice? If we do, we must support a complete boycott.
Okay, thank you. Just straight down the line. Nobody else to come out, just these people who are here now.
I think Greenbelt should be supporting a complete boycott, and not the least because it's an arts festival. And I think one of the major things we can do for the arts is to call for Israel to be banned from the Eurovision Song Contest.
I'm remembering some of what Nigel said last year about our definition of justice and God's definition of justice. I want Greenbelt to be shrewd in the way we handle this, and clever and global. Israel is a man-made nation in its infancy. We need to discipline it, bring it forward, educate it, and help it. We also need to really have an impact in the discipline, because it's in that way that it will mature. So I want these things to be joined up. We talk about finding someone powerful enough to do some suing about stuff that should never have come out of the West Bank. But we need to make sure we aren't divided against ourselves And we do that in a way that is not inconsistent with what we want to do as a boycott or engaging with the UN, which might look as if we're having a double mind. Please be very, very shrewd, but do something big and powerful that engages this bit and this bit and the applause that we've had this afternoon.
Okay, boycott, yes or no?
Yes, cleverly.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
I'm a bit of a reluctant speaker, but I... Can you hear?
Yes.
But I do believe that we should be supporting this boycott. I'm not a huge campaigner. I'm new to campaigning, really, since I passed the age of 65. And I don't want to die before I see a movement of justice for those beleaguered people. Both sides, Israel is paranoid. It needs to be freed, really. And I do not want to see the Palestinians suffering anymore. It's just heartbreaking.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Support a boycott.
Thank you. Quick comments now from you three.
Just to say, I grew up in Zimbabwe and in South Africa through the state of emergency, and it's impossible to understand from the outside the massive internal delusion. The massive internal delusion that you live in within those societies. And I expect the Israelis have no idea of how they're seen from the outside. And it's only by really strong boycott action, all the actions that have been talked about, that eventually the message seeps through down all the layers so that change can actually happen.
Yeah, thank you.
Just before Martin asks, the answer is yes to boycott. We have to be bold, we have to be strong, we have to be forward. We can't postpone any longer. We can't be scared of the what will be maybe a few negative implications, but what is, for, you know, in the end, a greater peace, the just for both sides. We have to move forward. We have to say yes for a complete boycott. Otherwise, we're just going to be scattering around, you know, no one will, sitting on the fence, as mentioned earlier, and nothing will get done, and then 10 years will pass and we'll have the same discussion. What's the point? Do it now.
Having seen the situation on the ground this year at the Amos pilgrimage, I would support a complete boycott.
Thank you very much. Okay. Vote. You said vote. Those who would favour Greenbelt moving its campaign towards supporting boycott in some form. Right, no, I'm sludging it. Okay, got it. Thank you very much. Great. Okay, final comments from each of you five. We'll start. Jonathan, come this way, and then we'll end the discussion. What's your final thought on this issue? As we leave here this afternoon.
I think that Greenbelt is the most wonderful place that I come to. I feel I am with the people of God who are totally engaged in what's happening in the world around them. And for Greenbelt to take this step, this bold step, I think there may be consequences. But I think it is a tremendous statement, and it sends out the message to all the people here and to their churches and communities, and I think it will also have an impact back in the Middle East. I'm really proud for you to take this step.
Thank you, Jonathan. Steve?
Yes, let's boycott. Let's stand up for human rights of Palestinians. Let's be a bit wise and savvy about this. Let's recognize that in doing that, we don't solve the difficulty of the crisis, the conflict in the Holy Land. There's something going on there which is very deep. It's about the groups of people seeking to achieve a sense of identity within a political framework. I'm not just talking about Palestinians and Israelis. I think we don't want to simply put this into a dichotomy of two groups. Boycotts are not going to achieve that sort of solution. So, yes, let's boycott, but I'm going to ask people also to do two other things at the same time. Firstly, to look to talk to people who you think may not agree with your point of view and listen to them. Secondly, to back up your boycott with political action. If you're boycotting settlement goods, the implication, I think, is that you would not agree that it should be legitimate for the UK to import goods from settlements. Therefore, let your MP know about that. If you're boycotting Israel, presumably you're looking for your government to introduce sanctions on the Israeli government. Let your MP know about that too.
Thanks, Steve.
Yes. Yes, the occupation has been going on for 42 years now, and it's really going to be wrapped up within this next year, which is supposed to be the duration of the peace talks. So the moral and right thing to do, as the Kairos document asks, and as the general feeling here shows, that you've got to make a stand. You've got to be fearless. This is for Israel's own good, not only for the Palestinians. And for Greenbelt, even though it's, as you say, it's just a small minority of the Christian community, will have a terrific impact. You will get a feedback from this, but I think you've got to take this moral stand up for real morality, truth, and justice. And boycott is one of the ways. I mean, there are many other ways, but that is the best way for civil society to act in concert in whatever fields. And you can just also get knowledgeable, spread the word, and really go forward.
Thank you, Abe.
I think I kind of lost the debate, so I'm not sure why you really need a rounding up. I do think we have to do something. I think we need to boycott. I think those boycotts need to be targeted and narrow and specific. And I don't agree with a blanket boycott at this stage. I notice at the end, kind of divestment and sanctions were sneaking in as well. Sanctions I'll go for. Divestment is a much, much wider, bigger debate that we didn't unpick.
And just, I guess, to echo what Nigel said, but also there were a few, some of the comments that were made down here, there were some really creative points in there. I'm not sure that there will be a great deal of a repercussion. I think people will expect Greenbelt to boycott. There may be a couple of lines in the Jewish Chronicle, and that will then be forgotten. So it's really up to people here to do some positive things. We've had some suggestions, but yes, to visit, but also to engage, also to think more widely, also to think, what does boycotting Israel mean, and what does it mean with my response to maybe some Israeli groups, ordinary Israeli groups, what can I do positively? These things are just as important. In fact, they're going to be far more important, I think, in the long term.
Okay, great. I'll just say thank you very much for all of you. Thank you very much for the panel, for the courage of some of the comments as well. Just two final things. There happens to be a list of Israeli goods sold in supermarkets in the Just Peace tent. And the final thing, if Dan and Tilly, these T-shirts are available in the Just Peace tent, and they support the Palestinian cause, the Israeli football team. Thanks so much, everybody. Thanks for being here. And thanks for a really good debate. Bye-bye.